Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, January 16th, 2025. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here, and we're joined by our great friend, Anna James Mitchell, natural resource educator with UW-Madison Extension. Anna, good to have you in with us.
It's good to be here, James.
Thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it. Hope you and yours had a great set of holidays, a good New Year's,
yes.
All the above. Yeah. Wishing a happy New Year's to all of our friends at Extension. Please pass that on
to
them. We're going to get right into it, and we're talking wildfires, wildfire information and awareness.
Yeah.
A time and perfect topic for us, and especially to dive into, where we hear this term or we hear about these things a lot. And I think one of the fears for me about this, and I will admit I have some stake in the game. I lived out in California. Yeah. I have a lot of family and friends out that way. I worry that we get a little tone deaf to these terms and these things happening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think that this adds not only detail and important information to that, but hopefully brings some empathy along with
it. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, you know. And I just want to acknowledge that this is a very sensitive topic right now, right? And I want to be so genuine in letting all the listeners know that my heart, my thoughts, my prayers are truly to those who are impacted directly or indirectly by the fires in California right now. And I just want to take this opportunity to really discuss the ecological impacts of wildfire and also how we in Wisconsin can prepare ourselves if something were to happen like this.
Yeah. There's some fascinating history involved with man and fire.
Yes.
And, you know, we've talked about this before with you. We've talked about it with a couple of individuals, actually, when it comes to the history of controlled burning and some of these things. It's all tied together and it's all interesting. And I think important when we take a step back, a beat back to take this in.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll just start there about the cultural relevance of kind of wildland fire in our, you know, country's history, right? So for a very long time, fire was an integral part to many indigenous ways of life, many indigenous people's ways of life. So Native Americans, Alaska Natives, Native Hawaiians, they used to use fire to clear areas for crops and travel. They used it to manage a lot of their land for specific species of both plants and animals. They used it to hunt game, to provide resources for themselves, and for many other important uses. These indigenous populations use fire as a tool to promote ecological diversity and to reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfires, right? These practices were really ignored during the era of fire suppression in the 20th century due to land management agencies' enforcement of different practices. However, today, this view has changed in recent years, and the use of fire is now an accepted practice for land management, and it's an accepted practice and promoted practice in land management.
It's something that, is just really interesting to think about.
Yeah.
And to think of so many of the beautiful parts of this state came from this.
Yeah.
You know, and opened this up for us and everything. It is a great thing to bring up, and it's a great example as well of how wildfire can be friend or foe.
Yeah. Well, it really can be, James. As we can see right now, wildfire in the wrong place at the wrong time can just wreak absolutely havoc, to threaten our homes, communities, natural and cultural resources, and fire in the right place at the right time can be beneficial for the environment for reasons like reducing grass, brush, and trees that can fuel those larger fires when not taken care of. So like we had started saying, it may seem like we in Wisconsin can be pretty far removed from wildfires. But that is far from the truth. In fact, according to the Wisconsin DNR website, I did a lot of research into this topic for our history. According to Wisconsin DNR website, the deadliest wildfire in Wisconsin's history occurred in 1871. For some of you who might know, that is the Peshtigo Fire. That burned 1.2 million acres. That is...
Whoa.
Yeah, 1.2 million acres across northeast Wisconsin. It took 1,200 lives and estimated $169 million in damage.
Hmm.
Yep. And in more recent history, there was a German road fire that occurred in 2013, and it consumed 7,499 acres and destroyed 104 structures in Douglas and Bayfield counties.
Just devastating to hear. And the 2013 one, I remember that. Yeah. I think many will out there, and it's hard to forget.
Yeah.
An important note, I'm a history buff, and I don't believe I knew about that one in 1871.
Peshtigo,
I don't think I heard about that. I will say, as a kid growing up in Chicago, one of the first stories you hear is the Chicago Fire.
Yeah.
And about that. And it's where you learn Second City doesn't come from, it comes from the rebirth of that city,
right.
The phoenix of that city coming back from the ashes. I think all of these stories are important, especially given the current climate and what is going on in out on the West Coast.
Yes, very much so.
Wildfire causes, I think, is another important aspect of this. Anna, can we get into that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So there are a lot of ways in which wildland fires can start, and I'm only going to touch on a couple today, and I really encourage you, if you're interested in learning more, to go to the Wisconsin DNR website. So according to Wisconsin DNR, debris burning is the number one cause for wildfires in Wisconsin. These fires generally occur in spring, after the snow melts and people are out taking care of their yards. The snow has melted, but the grass hasn't greened up, and there can be this time frame in the middle where there can be fire burn warnings, and really dry conditions. And that's when people are burning leaves or burning pine needles. And that's when a majority of the debris fires start in Wisconsin. There's also equipment fires, which account for nearly one third of Wisconsin's wildfires. Most of those are caused by sparks or hot exhaust systems from things like logging equipment, farm equipment, or just off-road recreation vehicles. We also have campfires. Wisconsin is very well known for our outdoor opportunities. Who doesn't love to go outside and have a campfire, right? But if you don't take care of that campfire once you're done sitting around it, that can be a huge cause for wildfires.
Yeah. And I think a lot of our generations, and all that, immediately think of Smokey the Bear and some of that. I think we could use Smokey right now. Bring him back. He's still out there.
Parts
still doing
of Smokey.
Stuff. Yeah, parts of Smokey. We could, but the awareness to that stuff was so... It felt like it was such, like, even in living in the city, I saw stuff like that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I think bringing awareness to this is one of the, silver linings that can come from an event like this.
Yeah.
How wildfire impacts wildlife and forests.
Yeah.
This is something, was new to me. I did not feel or experience very much until moving out here and seeing how my grandparents were so empathetic about this and worrying and wondering how the wildlife, how the animals are doing and all that.
Yeah.
That's an important part of the topic too.
Yeah, it's so important. So wildfires can be inevitable, but not all fire is harmful to our forests, right? A lot of our native animals, plants, et cetera, have adapted alongside ecosystems that have experienced fire throughout generations, right? So we're going to talk about two different types of forest fires. So we have low intensity fires. These fires can naturally clean and thin the forest by removing any flammable and thick vegetation on the floors and can reduce the risk of large scale, high severity fires, right? So the results of low intensity fires is improved habitat for wildlife, healthier soils, and new growth of native plants. In fact, some plants, like I said, in animal populations, they've adapted alongside fire and benefit from having fire on their landscapes. So for example, there's the endangered Karna blue butterfly caterpillar that gets all of its food from a plant that we can see here in central Wisconsin, which is wild lupin. Hmm. Well, wild lupin actually thrives in areas that have been disturbed by fire. There's two species, plant and animal, that benefit from fire, landscape that has experienced fire.
Wow.
And then some plant seeds require exposure to fire in order to even germinate and grow and bloom. So there's certain types of lilies that have to experience, their seeds have to experience fire in order to bloom and grow.
To that, if piggybacking off of that, one of the things that I learned out in California was how some trees do this as well.
Yeah.
Lodgepole pine, eucalyptus, and banksia all release their seeds during a fire.
Yeah.
There's even a pyropific plants.
Yeah.
Specific. I thought that's just fascinating.
I know. It is.
Nature is amazing.
It is truly.
Just amazing.
Yes.
And there was a little more to this during low-intensity fires.
Yeah, right? So during low-intensity fires, we oftentimes think about, well, what does the wildlife do? They've adapted to strategies to survive fire, right? So during these low-intensity fires, they can avoid fire and smoke in a couple of different strategies. So frogs and rodents will often retreat into deep underground burrows, where they will escape the fire and smoke. So other animals like deer and bear, they'll move across or around the forest until the flames subside. So they can, in those low intensity fires, the fire's not burning quick enough and isn't moving quick enough through the landscape for them to, you know, not be able to escape. They're able to kind of move around those fires.
I didn't see it in person, but one of the things I saw on video, I knew that there were bears in California.
Yeah.
I didn't know how many until I saw a video of this. And they're doing it like they're in order.
Yeah.
Like it's so organic the way they do it, but it looks like they actually like, okay, who's number
in charge?
Four? Yeah, who's in charge and all that? It's just very unique. It also speaks to, again, the creativity and the beauty of nature and how adaptable it is. And I think that there's maybe a bit of a sadness to it when you think about how nature has had to adapt because of things that we have done or something.
Right.
Fires have been happening long before human beings.
Oh, yes.
And so animals adapting to this, it makes sense, but it's still just fascinating and really cool to hear about. And again, I think brings in some empathy, not only for these animals, but for our fellow human beings all over, not just in the West Coast, but whenever these things happen again or what have you.
Yeah.
The high severity fire burns through the forest, touching on some of that, touching on that a little bit too.
Yeah. Yeah. So high severity fires, these are the fires that burn through the forest floor and canopy, and they can be devastating to wildlife habitat and surrounding communities. So during high severity wildfires, wildlife have more challenging time finding refuge because the fire burns so quickly across a landscape, and then it actually climbs often to the tree canopy. So this is, you know, what we're seeing in California. It's moving at just such a rapid rate that it's just devastating. So these fires, they're burning so hot that they can actually scorch the soil and cause it to be no more suitable for habitat, for like native plants. And so when you have these native plants that are just wrecked, for lack of better terms, by wildfire, they have a hard time coming back. So what moves in? Invasive species.
Yeah.
We've talked about invasive species before, right?
It comes back. Just like invasive species, it keeps coming back.
And they're so prolific and quick to move into those areas. We've talked about wildlife corridors in the past here on the show. Well, wildlife quarters in high severity fires are greatly impacted. They can be disconnected due to the massive loss of vegetation, which impedes the natural movement of animals and can restrict habitat and food sources. So,
you know, another one that this brings up too is the severity of these things in out in Australia. Yeah. And how much wildlife, I believe it was like something like 20-30% of their wildlife they lost during that last devastating fire they had a couple of years ago.
Right.
It brings it home when these kind of things are happening in our neck of the woods.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And that high severity fires, just one last thing on
that. Yeah. You know. So high severity fires, we don't really think of water quality being impacted by fires, but in high severity fires, they can cause runoff that contains ash and debris. Well, when that runoff reaches a lake, river, or stream, it can actually really impact in a negative way the water quality and the life cycles of any fish or frogs, any aquatic life, really. So that's kind of another impact of those high severity fires that I think oftentimes gets overlooked, right? We're not really thinking about water when we're thinking about fire. I mean, we are in a way, but also not the water resources, right?
Right. And it's so important, no matter what the topic, really, if there isn't a chance to talk about water quality, to talk about it, to bring it up, to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
It's still something that is on so many of our minds and something that we need to focus on in order to make it happen and get this more and more cleaner water.
Yeah.
And I cannot thank you enough for this topic and diving into this with us today. Yeah. And really getting into not only the history of it and the importance of that, but the importance of understanding this stuff. You brought it home for us with some of the stories that happened here in Wisconsin. Yeah. But it's just as noteworthy and just as important to have some empathy, even if it wasn't happening
right.
here.
Right, yes.
And I do appreciate the tie-in. I've tried to do a similar thing on the morning show mm-hmm. and letting people know, you know, if... everybody knock on wood, all that,
yes.
You know, heaven forbid anything were to happen here in Wisconsin, devastating
yeah.
like this.
Yeah.
We would want Californians caring about us.
Yes.
We would want Californians traveling here to help us.
Right.
Like you see so many Wisconsinites and people from the Midwest traveling out to California
yep.
right now.
Yeah.
We are all connected.
We are.
And the way we get through this in life is together.
And it's a community approach.
It's a nice reminder of that.
Yes.
I think that I could sit there and bark about it all I want. This gives us the meat to back that up. This gives us the data and the facts
well,
to back
I'm glad
that up.
For that.
And I think you could chew gum and walk at the same time. You can find so much of this interesting and appreciate the history of it and the future of really so many of these things we talked
yeah.
about, while also understanding that there is so much going on out there that there's as much as we grasp, I think there's a lot that we're still trying to grasp.
Yeah.
We're still trying to understand. And when it comes to all of this, what about what we can do? This
yeah.
is one of my favorite things about talking with you. You could have just left the topic right there with all that information, but you would like to wrap up with how we can impact these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, I got to give the listeners a little homework
appreciate
assignment,
that.
Right?
Yeah, I love that.
And, you know, it's just, I want to stress that we are very removed, right, from the wildfires in California right now. It is a possibility in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. At the scale, I don't know. But it is something that we need to think about. How are we making sure that our communities and our homes are well prepared for the circumstances of a wildfire? So I did a little bit of research on some resources that would be helpful for the listeners to visit. There's a ton of information on how to prepare your homes, yourself, and your community for the possibility of wildfires. So one of those resources is ready.gov. They have just a simple list of ways that you can plan for wildfires. And some of the ways include recognizing the warnings and alerts. So you can download the FEMA app and receive real-time alerts from the National Weather Service, or you can sign up for community alerts in your area through the Emergency Alert System. So just really being aware of those systems that are out there to let you know if this is a possibility, right? You can make an emergency plan and ensure that everybody in your household knows and understands that plan. What will we do if this is a possibility in our community, right? You can strengthen your home by building or remodeling with fire-resistant materials. You can identify an outdoor water source with a hose that can reach any part of your property, right? I mean, I would say any part of your property that is close to your home, the buildings that you don't want
yeah,
lost
yeah.
In an instance like this. So you can create a fire resistance zone that is free of leaves, debris, or any other flammable materials that's at least 30 feet from your home. And then just know your evacuation zone and your evacuation route.
Those are things that are never horrible to practice, never
right.
bad. And while it is nothing even close to what's going on in California,
no.
I've mentioned before, my family had a really devastating fire happen to our home. Mm. And having a plan literally saved us.
Yeah.
It saved our dog, saved so much of the what was in that house.
Right.
And could have been so much worse without having a plan. It's a great note about that. And we want to encourage people to check out the DNR's website as well.
Yeah, so Wisconsin DNR, if you go to their website, it's dnr.wisconsin.gov. You can search fire management. They have a webpage on there with just loads of wonderful resources and information that help you understand wildfire, help you understand how land management in Wisconsin uses prescribed burning as a practice, but also they've got really great resources on preparing your property for the possibility of wildfire. They give you action steps to become what they call firewise. Really great resources to just increase your knowledge of what to do in the circumstances and how to prepare. And this website also has resources for community fire plans. So if you're a community planner, I'm sure a majority of communities have that. Maybe reaching out, if you're a community member, reaching out and seeing if your community has a fire plan and make yourself aware of what that fire plan is.
You have insurance, and you hope you never have to use it. You've got that there, and you break glass in case of needed. Right. That's what these things are. And whether it's the DNR website or some of the other resources Anna has given you today, that can only help you strengthen that. And hopefully you never have to use any of this, but boy, it's good to have.
Yeah, it is so good to have. And, you know, besides ready.gov and Wisconsin DNR, if you just want to learn more, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Forest Service, there's so many different U.S. Park Service. There's so many different resources out there that you can look into, research for just more information on how to inform yourself. I can't stress this enough. I think every time I come on here, I really just want to help the listeners inform themselves of topics, to be aware of their natural resources, to be aware of how to protect their natural resources, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
and you're doing an amazing job at it.
Oh, thank
we greatly appreciate the details you put into this. You can find out more as well of how you can help impact things over in California right now. If you go to our website, civicmedia.us, there's a link right there to go to Convey of Hope. There are some other resources as well, encourage you to look into, and any ways that you can help out over there. We greatly appreciate that. And as much as we appreciate the time from you, Anna, and all the research and all the homework you put into these things. I don't know if the audience or even I understand how much you put into this and the added extra benefit you put into. Thank you so much for that. I really do appreciate it. If people want to find out more, reach out to you yourself, how can they do that?
Yeah, you can stop into the extension office over at the Wood County Courthouse, or you can email me at anna.m.james@wisc.edu.
And check out their website, extension.wisc.edu, as well. Bookmark that. Be sure to follow them on social media. Share the events and the different things that they share on their page. Mm-hmm. You just never know who might see it otherwise. And support our friends at UW Extension, because, boy, did they support our communities and put back into our communities. Anna, we appreciate you. Again, say Happy New Year to everybody over there for us. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, James.
We'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you as well, right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.